Welcome to Intuitive Eating for Christian Women. I'm your co-host, Erin Todd. I'm a writer and an intuitive eater.
And I'm your co-host, Charlie Castle, registered dietitian and exercise physiologist. We're here to help you discover whole health for your mind, body, and soul.
That's right. Our goal is to embody scripture, ditch dieting, and live on purpose.
Woo! Woo! Yes, girl.
Welcome back, friends. Does facing a chronic illness mean I'm stuck with dieting? Is it possible to navigate chronic health conditions through intuitive eating? Friends, we are going there today. In this episode, we're talking with our guest, Brooke Fredrickson. She is a registered dietitian and diabetes educator who helps women heal their relationship with food and their bodies using a biblical and functional approach. In our conversation with Brooke today, we're going to explore how dieting wreaks havoc on our health, and Brooke shares her personal and professional experience in managing chronic health conditions through intuitive eating. After you listen, we would appreciate it so much if you would take just a few moments to rate and review the podcast. When you do this, you're helping other women find the podcast, encouraging them to listen so that they can discover how to apply the gospel to their relationship with food and body. Before we jump into this conversation with Brooke, as a reminder for all of our podcast episodes, this program is for informational and educational purposes only, and it is not a substitute for individual medical or mental health advice. Our aim is to introduce you to the principles of intuitive eating and help you see how those principles align with scripture so you can improve your relationship with food, your body, and God, and cast out dieting for good. Hey, Brooke, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, welcome, or thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here.
You have a podcast of your own, so I'm sure that kind of just came out.
Yes, totally, it's habit.
Oh, goodness. So we want to get to know you a little bit through your food story and your God story, and I know those are going to weave together. So just take us back to the beginning.
So my God story would start sometime around the age of 7. My parents actually became believers when I was 5 years old. My little brother had kind of a miraculous healing that led to their salvation. And then they sent me to Bible camp. And so when I was 7, I went to Bible camp, and that's where I accepted Christ as my savior. And so I grew up in a Christian home. I grew up going to Bible camps and youth groups, and I counseled, and I went to Christian college. And so it's just kind of always been part of my life. And it's, I definitely went through some periods of rebellion. But it's been really interesting to see, you know, the sanctification process over my life. And I think we can talk about this later too, but like my come to Jesus moment, I think like my real come to Jesus moment was in my late 20s, when I think I really for the first time understood what grace meant. Because part of my upbringing was I feel like I was kind of raised with, I mean, I knew that Jesus died for me. I knew what grace was at that time. But like so much of it was about performance and looking like a good Christian or acting like a good Christian and not really surrendering my life and accepting that free gift as it was, you know? And so like, that's how I kind of lived my life growing up. My food issues started when I was about 11. I had, my mom is tall and beautiful and thin, but she was very much immersed in diet culture. And I remember for the first time seeing a diet plan, you know, attached to the fridge. It was like a 1 week diet plan attached to the fridge. It had all these meals and portion sizes and stuff. And I just remember like reading it, and it just kind of hit me like, huh, I wonder why she's eating this way, and maybe I need to be eating this way. You know, like I wasn't even aware of my body at that point. I don't think I was dissatisfied with it, but it was just kind of like, well, if my mom is doing this, maybe I should too, right? And so I think that was the first time it really hit me. And then like, you know, through puberty and things like that, I got more into food label reading. So my little brother was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And so we grew up counting carbohydrates and reading labels to, you know, make sure that it was something that he, you know, quote unquote, could or couldn't have. And so I became really obsessive with that through junior high, counting a lot of fat grams and limiting that kind of stuff. And then I think through high school, it turned into more restriction, which then resulted in some more binging. And so I'd go, you know, like starve myself basically all day, or I'd have like an apple and Diet Coke for lunch. And then I'd go to basketball practice. And then in the evening, I'd eat way too much because I was just hungry. And so I just got into this really ishy pattern. And so I wouldn't say I ever had an eating disorder, but I definitely had an unhealthy relationship with food in my body in that way. I used exercise. I over-exercised a lot, and I underfed myself. And so the funny thing is, like, through all of this, like, my weight and my body never really changed. So it's like I was doing all of these things, and it never made a difference, but it never clicked in my head that, like, hey, you don't have to do this. Like, this isn't, you know, getting you to the goal maybe that I thought it would. But it was doing a lot of harm to my body. And then when I went to school to be a dietitian, I think we all know that just doesn't help any problems and actually creates more problems. I think my education, I know specifically, was very calorie focused. A lot of, you know, fat restriction, calorie restriction. I mean, we still did ADA diets way back when I was in school. So it did not help my eating at all. I was still under eating and still over exercising. And it was during my junior year of college that I had kind of a health crisis. I kept getting severe hives and angioedema and ending up in the emergency room, and we couldn't figure out what was wrong. And after, like, I think it was 3 or 4 times I ended up in the emergency room, they did some testing, and that's when I found out I had Hashimoto's and some autoimmune things going on. And so we got that treated. And, you know, it's something that I've struggled with going forward. I still have the hives, and we'll talk about that later, and how that's been going for me. But I like, looking back, it's like I can see how my behaviors, that the under eating and the over exercising, the stress that I was putting on my body, probably caused my health issues. Like, looking back, I really truly believe that I actually caused those health issues because I was stressing my body so hard. Like, our bodies were not created to live like that, to live on not enough and putting too much out. And it was like, okay, well, I can't do all of this, so I'm going to shut down some of your systems, or I'm going to, you know, like, that's how my body responded. And it took me years to, like, realize that I had done that. And it wasn't like, again, when I mentioned I had this coming to Jesus moment in my late 20s, that was kind of when intuitive eating was first introduced to me. I understood grace. I learned about intuitive eating, and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I don't have to live this way. I don't have to count everything. I don't have to restrict. I don't have to hate my body. I don't have to do this. And it was like a weight was lifted off my shoulder. And it was like at that same time that I was introduced to intuitive eating, my faith, like, really became real to me, because I understood that I didn't have to perform anymore, that I didn't have to look a certain way, right, to be accepted or to be good enough. And it just kind of all came to a head at that point. And then, that was kind of the start of my intuitive eating journey. So.
Wow. Wow, Brooke. We have very similar stories.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wow. Mine was senior year, not junior year, and rheumatoid arthritis. And same thing, underfed, overexercising. Eventually your body says, nope.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I would love to say that I'm like, I learned from that. I'm not under eating or over exercising anymore, but I do push my limits from a stress standpoint. Mm-hmm. And I do take on more than I can handle on a regular basis. And so that's something I'm still dealing with in adulthood, is knowing my boundaries and knowing my limits. Because my personality is, I'm very driven, and I like to think that I can do it all, but I just, my body reminds me that I can't. So,
I hear you.
Yeah.
That's so good. I think that knowing your boundaries and limits is really like the 2.0 part. Like, you've pushed through the initial, I'm not going to do the under eating, over exercising behaviors anymore, but it's still, you know, the undercurrents is performance if you're a driven person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what am I doing this for? And it's just so easy to do that. I totally relate. I totally do that. I'm currently doing that. Lord help me. I think that is really important to hear, because a lot of people, I think, get some initial healing as they're walking through intuitive eating, and they are feeding themselves enough, maybe for the first time ever, and they're moving a little bit less so that their body's not injuring itself constantly or just in pain. And it's like, okay, I think I'm okay. And then we still do other things that stress us out and hurt our bodies in other ways, whether it's work habits or not resting enough or not pursuing spiritual, mental, emotional health, all those other facets of health. That's like, right. It's easy to slack and tell yourself, well, I'm eating enough and I'm not moving in a way that hurts me. And like, we'll call that good enough. And it's like, there's actually more past that.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, you're preaching it.
Oh, I feel that. I'm feeling that hard, Erin. Wow, that's good stuff.
So, Brooke, I really want to dig into your experience with, getting the Hashimoto's diagnosis and then being able to look back and recognize that a lot of my behaviors and choices probably caused this harm to my body. And so I think we've got a big cultural misconception about dieting being good for you that we need to dismantle again and say mm-hmm. it in a different way. Right. So let's just park out here for a minute and like talk about how dieting actually harms our body and wreaks havoc on our body. Can you start that conversation for us, please?
Yeah. So one thing that I learned through intuitive eating, especially, was that we need to, there isn't a calorie amount. There isn't like this external, maybe there isn't this external number or external force that is going to tell us what our body needs, that we really do need to pay attention to what our body needs. And the best way to know how to do that is paying attention to those hunger and fullness signals. I don't think that was ever anything that I did growing up. I never paid attention to that. Everything that I did from a young age was externally driven and what someone else told me to do. I was obsessed with fitness magazines, and I would make scrapbooks out of them with their diet plans and exercises. Like, you know, like I literally have scrapbooks full of that stuff. We didn't have social media back then. So that's what I did. But like, it's crazy to think the things that we put our bodies through that they were never intended to go through. And so we know that restriction, not only does it, you know, yes, it will actually slow your metabolism down. It can destroy your metabolism. It changes your body composition. When our body isn't getting enough, it actually causes our thyroid hormone to be suppressed. Our body will make less hormones, because it's trying to keep your heart beating and your lungs breathing and the other important vital organs. It decreases your reproduction. So someone struggling with fertility who is not eating enough, they are going to be harmed. It's going to be harder for them to reproduce if they're not eating enough. And so like when we have our focus on weight, like my whole life, my focus was on weight and body size. And sure, we might say it's for health. I never really did any of that for health. It was always for a body size. And so I think that key is just really transitioning from body size and weight to what is best for my body. Like, what does my body need? And when we turn it to what our body needs, it's actually coming from like a place, it's almost like an abundance mindset rather than like a poverty mindset, where we're like, God has provided all of these things. What can I add? What can I eat? What can I put into my body and my life that is going to be beneficial, rather than what do I need to take away? And I think that's what dieting does. And that's what restriction does. It's all like, what can't I have? What do I need to take away? What do I need to restrict? What less? Where we really need to change our mindset to, like, you know, understanding that God gave us these bodies for a reason and for a purpose. And it's our job to take care of them. Like he is expecting us to steward them well. And that includes feeding them adequately and giving them enough nutrients so that it functions at its peak capacity, right? And dieting does the complete opposite. So it's finding that or it's getting to that understanding and kind of finding that balance, because I think too much of diet culture is on the weight restriction takeout of our diet, when it really, like, if you really care about your health, those things are not part of it or shouldn't be part of it.
Yeah, I feel like I've really noticed this shift. Like, just like if I can go back and look at like 80s, 90s conversations that I remember hearing with adults, it was like recognized that like extreme diets or crash diets were not healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like it was recognized then that that wasn't for health. That was for weight loss and probably wasn't good for your health. And then it's like 2000s forward, certainly in the last 10 years, the conversation has really shifted where it is all really being guised as health, like juice cleanses and like really, really restrictive eating being talked about as if it's for your health. It's the healthy option. Right. So I know somebody's listening right now and they are like, oh my God, like I thought I was doing this for my health. And it hurts so bad to hear that it was not positive for my health. And the enemies trying to give them all kinds of guilt and shame about harming their body. Tell us about how grace impacted you walking through kind of that realization.
Right. I mean, that's so my whole like philosophy is called Eat with Grace. If anyone has found me or followed me on social media, it's all about eating with grace. And I think, you know, again, that's where I had a very black and white mindset around food. I had a very black and white mindset, even around health. I think it was kind of ingrained in me at a young age and then, you know, confirmed through my education that like there's a right and a wrong way to eat. And there's good and bad. And like coming to that realization and like taking the thought or the concept of grace as, you know, this gift from God and like applying it to ourselves and how we eat. Like it just made sense to me. And I think as I dug into the Bible, that's when I really started digging in and like saying, like, what does God tell us about food? How does he tell us to eat? How does he tell us to live? And I live. And when I couldn't really find anything specific in there, right? That he doesn't call us to a specific body size. He doesn't talk about any of that kind of stuff. It's kind of like, you know, believe in me, love other people, do what I call you to do. Like that's what he's called us to do. There is a lot of gray area. There's a lot of that grace in our lives where we can, you know, we have the free will to make choices. But it's understanding that like we are on this earth temporarily. These bodies are temporary. And our whole mission is to keep our mind on and our eyes focused on heaven and like on eternal matters. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for me, all of my food and body issues were a complete distraction from what I think God really wanted me to do. It was keeping me focused on me rather than focused on him and other people. And so it's so important. That's why I think like the whole concept of grace and just giving yourself grace and how you're eating is important, because otherwise it becomes this really legalistic, black and white, punishing yourself mentality that I don't think is beneficial for anyone. Like it's just not. So.
Yeah, that's good. I think the black and white versus the gray of grace is like a really good way for people to see the contrast. And I think the shame of dieting and harming my health that I think, Shar, you were just mentioning. Mm. Oh my goodness, does grace cover that?
Of course.
Right? Like that is so, I think a lot of us, if we really want to sit with that question and try and do the look back, like you did, Brooke, when you were able to see, okay, something's not going well. I have a Hashimoto's condition I need to care for and treat, and looking back and recognizing, okay, these were some choices that probably impacted that and I can do things differently. Like when you're looking at it with grace in mind, it's not a, I messed up and that was wrong. and now I'm going to be right, that's still kind of in that legalistic vibe and tone of there's a right way to do this. I think it's all messy and gray and a heart posture of how am I going to respond and care now that I know this and now that I have a new focus on like what the Lord is actually asking me to do with this body.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And like going through, once I started getting into intuitive eating and the Eat with Grace stuff, I went through various, I don't know what the best word is. I kind of pendulum swung maybe between things. And I think maybe we all do. And that's just part of the process where it's like, you know, I went through a period where it's like, I don't have to care is how I kind of thought about it. Right. I don't have to care. So I kind of went off the deep end and just like, didn't even care about my health, did whatever I want, ate whatever I want for a period of time. And then I was kind of like, I swung back to like, well, that's, I don't feel good doing this and this isn't good for my body. Like, I just was like, okay. So then I'd swing back and forth. And I think a lot of us do that. And I see a lot of my clients doing that. Because I do think like the concept of intuitive eating is very, it's difficult to grasp.
Yeah.
You know, but what you see on social media of, you know, the donuts and the ice cream is not really what intuitive eating is. Yes, yeah. You can give yourself permission to eat those things. But I have people that, you know, people that I've worked with who say have diabetes and are struggling with their blood sugars. And, you know, we'll talk about some tips or tricks that they can do to help, you know, manage their blood sugars at mealtime and prevent swings and stuff like that. And anytime I say something, they're like, oh, wait, but isn't that a food rule? Okay. No, it's not. Like we're, you know, this is where that nuance comes in on managing chronic disease, because it's like, yes, intuitive eating is great for healing your relationship with food and coming to an understanding, making peace with food, giving yourself grace in those areas. But if you have a chronic health condition that needs to be managed, there are some things that you can do with food that are going to benefit your health and that you might need to do. And that's okay. But it's not a rule. It's not, again, the focus isn't on weight loss. Mm-hmm. It's a guideline. And I think there's a difference in there. And I think so many people struggle with that concept of how do I not follow food rules or make food rules, but still have some kind of guidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it comes to like, I always talk about we know some stuff from science about nutrition. Like we value that. We're both dietitians. We know some stuff. Mm-hmm. And people have their lived experience. And we know that scripture calls us to be good stewards of our bodies. So where do those three things intersect for you?
Right.
Is how you make these decisions, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. My lived experience, say I'm someone with diabetes. My lived experience is this food causes my blood sugar really to spike. I'm aware of that. Most of the time, I think I'm going to choose not to eat that food because I don't want to experience that in my body. That doesn't make me good or bad. It's not an outside person telling me I can't eat that food. Like this is a personal, purposeful, peaceful decision that I am making for my health.
Right. Yes.
So it's not that considering nutrition is bad or medical nutrition therapy is bad. Those are good things. They're unhelpful when we're coming at them from the lens of diet culture. But when we're coming at them from really a healthy relationship with food and body, they can be really helpful.
Yes.
But there's this healing process that has to take place before you can get there.
Right.
And that's where a lot of that pendulum swinging is happening. I did the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so just like in 2019, I had kind of another flare up of my health issues. So my thyroid's always been pretty stable. I've actually never had symptoms of that. So like, it doesn't bother me, but the chronic hives have continued for 20 years. I've had them as long as 10 months at a time where I have them every single day and they don't go away for 10 months. Mm-hmm. And the longest remission I've ever had is 5 years. And so they come and go. But in 2019, for whatever reason, actually, I know the reason, I was under a lot of stress. I was in a period of time where I wasn't sleeping well, I wasn't eating well, I was taking on too much. I ended up with a flare up of my hives, and that time it lasted 10 months. Well, going back like 20 years ago, there was no treatment for it. It was just take antihistamines, which didn't do anything for me. So I've always just kind of dealt with them and never done anything. Well, now 2019, my doctor referred me to go see someone, and because there's new medications and things out. So from 2019 to 2023, January of this year, I went through four different flare-ups of my hives. I tried multiple medications. At one time, I was taking 14 over-the-counter antihistamine pills a day just to help with the itch, because I was covered head to toe and miserable. And not only do I get the hives, but I get angioedema, so my face swells. Like if you've ever seen the movie Hitch, where like Will Smith, you know, he's like all swollen after eating that. That's what I look like on a daily basis. And I would wake up in the morning like that and not have any idea. Like I'd go to bed fine and I'd wake up in the morning and just be miserable. And then it just, not only was it painful, but it was like socially isolating. Okay. So for the past 4 years, that's what I've been dealing with. It's been constant and nonstop. And we finally, I went to the doctor in January because he had me on some really potent and like immunosuppressants that are used for like organ rejection drugs. And he's, you know, I'm like, this isn't working anymore. Like it was working for a while and now it's not working. And he's like, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do for you. And hearing that kind of put me on a, I mean, it was devastating at the moment, but it kind of put me on a trajectory to like really take interest in the disease and my health. Like I've never really looked into it, because there's not a whole lot of research out there, but, or there hadn't been in the past. And so when I really started digging in, I'm like, well, maybe there's something I can do with my eating. Maybe there's something I can do with my lifestyle. And I just learned a ton. And so that was one thing, like personally, I had to make some significant lifestyle changes on my own in January, that I would not have been able to do if I did not have a healthy relationship with food.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so thankful that I had learned how to eat intuitively and I had healed that relationship with food, because if I had gone into this having to make some changes to my diet that significantly improved my symptoms, I think it would have spiraled me towards like eating disorder behavior.
Yeah.
I think because it would have created such an intense fear and anxiety in me, that I don't know if I would have been able to handle it. And so, having gone through this now myself, I'm like, okay, so when I'm dealing with clients who are also struggling with the chronic illness, like I know how it feels to be in a position where you feel like you need to eat in a certain way. Maybe you need to avoid certain foods, you know, so that you can control your symptoms or have some relief or something. And that's not a bad thing, but mm-hmm. like trying to combine that or intertwine that with intuitive eating is so hard, but it's been something that I've learned a ton about over the last 6 months. And so it's kind of transitioning my practice. Like it's just making me think differently about things. I'm like, how can I help people who want to eat intuitively and have these chronic diseases? And it's like finding that transition period and making it easy for them. And so that's kind of where I've been working on just from my personal experience. I think it's really changed my mind on some things and my focus on things.
Yeah, that's so good. I really relate to that. I tried to go like the diet route of like managing the rheumatoid arthritis when I was already in a super disordered relationship mm-hmm. with food or exercise. Mm-hmm. And that is like what kicked me over into an eating disorder, because right. it got so restrictive. And so mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank God out of that, you know, but now I've been able to notice like, oh, okay. Like when I have a lot of that for days in a row, I really notice like joint swelling or what, like I can notice that stuff and make the conscious decision to change that without feeling restricted or feeling any of those things. And so that's, yeah, I think that it's so, I think it's so important to recognize like there, mainstream intuitive eating on social media, you see so much of the like, you don't have to care about your health, like just do whatever you want, just go all in. And that's not intuitive eating. because like intuitive eating considers your health. But I went there for a while. I'm like always the first to admit it. I went there for a while. But there's so much value in thinking about how your nutrition affects you and how movement affects you, the same way we think about how things affect our mental health and our spiritual health and all of those things. So that's an element of this too, that I think is so important. When we're working with people with medical nutrition therapy, it's like talking about like, okay, here's some changes you might be able to make to your diet, but let's talk about how those changes might affect you as a whole person. Would making that change affect your relationship with your family? Would it affect your mental health? What, like, is it worth making that change or should we go another route?
Yes, 100%. Because if they're not in a good place and if that's going to add a ton of stress to their life, it's not going to help.
Exactly.
It's not going to help. Mm-hmm. They have to be in a place where they have a good relationship with their food and their body, and they're able to make some small changes that are going to benefit their health condition, whatever it is. But right, if it becomes something that is like so overwhelming, that it's socially isolating, that they're constantly panicking and worrying about what they can and can't eat, it's just going to cause more stress and actually make the condition worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah.
Brooke, can I have you just unpack a little bit? Like you're describing, like intuitive eating helped you to get to that place of having a good and healed relationship with food and body. Mm-hmm. Like, what did that, like, how would you define that? Like, what did that look like for you? Like, I guess maybe asking in the other sense, like, if you're trying to put a boundary around that, so you know when you go out of it, like, I know this is a good relationship with food for me. And so like the warning signs start to go off when XYZ happens, or I start to feel differently. Like, what is that for you? And I know it's going to be different for everybody, but talking through where you found that feeling, because you experienced it. So let's hear what that sounds like for you.
I would say I know that I'm in a good place with food when I'm not constantly thinking about it. Mm-hmm. When I can look at food in a very positive light, as in like looking forward to eating and enjoying what I'm eating and finding satisfaction in it, like that's really good.
Yeah.
If I think of it in terms of like, and I don't even know if I do this anymore, it's been a really long time. Like, I don't think in terms of like how it's going to affect my weight or anything like that. Like that's, it's just so far gone. I think I've kind of plunged that out of my mind or way of thinking. But like, even like relationship with my body too, it's just something that I've come to accept and I'm content with where I'm at. As long as I feel good, you know, like as long as I feel good, I know that whatever I'm eating and I'm doing is great. Like, my warning signs, or if I start getting, especially with like how I'm currently eating, there's some things that I have to limit histamine in my diet. And so like, if I feel, and I've been slowly adding things in because I can tolerate small amounts here and there, but like, if I start noticing that I'm getting anxious or fearful about trying things, or about, even just the thought of like going out to eat or something like that, I can kind of talk myself through it and just calm down and be like, okay, I'll find something that I can do. Worst case scenario, I have hives tomorrow. I know not to do that next time, and we'll learn from there. You know, like it's just kind of talking myself through that and talking myself down. But I think fear is a big trigger for me. Like when I notice that I have fear or anxiety about eating, then I'm like, okay, I kind of need to stop myself and check and see where I'm at.
That's so good. That's so good. And I feel like that goes back to the all or nothing thinking a lot about when we hear diet culture, like you're either doing it right or you're failing. So like if you eat something that gives you hives, you have failed. You're a failure.
Right.
Like so not true. Like this is all just like living and learning and experimenting. And like,
yes,
sometimes I'm going to choose to eat something I know might cause a problem, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm going to eat something I didn't know was going to cause a problem, and it will, and that's okay. You learn from it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it, like when I first started, eating this way, I mean, I was triggered a little bit, you know, like going through all these food lists. Food lists are like the worst thing when you have these like, eat this, don't eat this kind of thing. And so again, I had to really step back and just talk myself through it and be like, okay, I'm going to just start with this. I'm going to do this for the most part. I'm going to see how this goes and just make it a process. I think we're so tempted to just like cut everything out and just kind of go crazy. And it worked better for me to go through a process. I was actually working with someone. I actually hired a dietitian to help me through this and just get like a second opinion. Like, I just need some help navigating this. I'm not sure what I have to do versus where I can like have some leeway. Part of me being an intuitive eater, I was so anti-diet that I'm like, I don't want to have to do this. Like, I don't want to have to do this. I told people not to do this all the time, but it was like, I was so desperate at that point just to find relief in my symptoms. I knew it was something that I needed to try. And so I think she helped me a ton through it, just, you know, navigating that space and trying to figure out where to go. And then like over time, like you said, I think the curiosity piece, the experimental piece, I think is really important, and people need to be encouraged to do that, or they're just going to be stuck in this restrictive eating pattern forever. And we're not intended to do that. And as our body heals, you know, hopefully we can overcome some of those things and they get better in those, you know, if we were having food sensitivities or symptoms before, maybe that will go away as we reduce our stress, as we, you know, fix our mental health issues, as we spend more time in there. Like, there's all these, you know, the holistic human, and all of the aspects of us, all of those things are going to benefit us when they come into balance. And it's, so we're making sure we're working on all of those.
Yeah.
Brooke, I'm curious if you've got any, other than eating and movement, practices that really help you when you're stressed and in a season, like you mentioned in 2019, when you were in it.
Yes.
What has helped you to, cope with that in a way that serves you?
I've done a lot of work on, learning how to establish boundaries and to say no to people, because I am a people pleaser. I've been a people pleaser my whole life. And so, learning how to say no has been probably one of the biggest things that has benefited me. And saying no to the right things, right? I mean, there's some things that we have to do, some things that aren't necessary, but I think just like taking time, not giving an immediate yes, but taking time praying about something before actually saying yes and committing. And I think
that's it right there.
So that's been a huge one for me. Also, establishing a really good bedtime routine has been great for me. I do really well when I sleep well. And so like taking my evenings, I take a hot bath almost every night. I read a book. I just like, I take time to relax and I sleep better. And when I sleep better, my day goes better and just, it all kind of comes together. So those are two things I think that have made, a big difference for me, you know, apart from, you know, spending time in the word and prayer. I mean, things always, are better when I do that, but that's a habit I've had established even through those stressful times. So it's like, maybe just taking the time and being more intentional about how I'm spending my time, I think is one of the biggest ones. Yep.
Yeah, it's so good. I think it's so easy to not think of those things as like healthy behaviors and just kind of like not even consider them to be health choices, but setting boundaries and on your relationships, your sleep, your time, like those are absolutely health practices. I think naming them as such and like giving people permission to be like, hey, look at these areas. This is health too. Like, this matters. These behaviors are important and can contribute to your well-being. I know somebody needed to hear that today.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, what an amazing health behavior to pray about something before saying yes or no to it.
Yes. Wow.
That's amazing.
So good.
Yeah. Okay. I just kept getting into the bad habit of saying yes to something and then resenting it.
Yeah.
You know, like I would do that all the time, even though it was like, it seemed it seemed minimal at the moment. It seemed like no big deal at the moment. And then I would just dread. I would just dread doing it. It's like, okay, I don't like being in this position. Is it my bad attitude? Or should I not have said yes to this in the first place? So just really thinking through that. Whether it's professional and like doing a speaking event, or if it's as little as like, can you play piano in church this Sunday? Like, just making sure that I'm making the best decision with where I'm at and how much my time and energy that I have to give at that moment. So,
oh, you play piano, Brooke?
I do. Yep. I lead worship and I play piano, and yeah.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's so cool. You don't happen to have like a particular favorite worship song or anthem that like relates to the food and body journey we all share, do you? I have a couple, but I don't know that they would really be appropriate for like a church service, just worship jams. But if you've got any off the top of your head, I'd love to know what they are.
Honestly, what comes to my mind right now, I don't know if you've heard the, it's kind of a hymn. It's called Yet Not I, But Through Christ in Me. It's a newer song. I think it just came out in the last couple of years. But I think like any song, any worship song that takes the focus off me and puts it on Christ and what he's done and what he can do for me, I think is always good. And I think when it comes to body image issues or food issues, anytime we can take our eyes off ourselves and put it on him, it's him who does the work through us. It's not us. It's not what we do. Those always speak to me. So that's one of my favorites right now.
That's good. Awesome. So, okay, you mentioned your Eat with Grace show and your dietetics process. So, like, just tell us a little bit more about what you offer people online and where they can find you and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so I have a virtual practice online. I meet with clients one-on-one, typically. Every once in a while, I'll teach some group classes and stuff. But you can find me at brookefredrickson.com. I'm working on some courses and some things out there. I don't know. Like I said, I'm kind of in transition on how I want to get into this chronic illness, intuitive eating thing. And I'm trying to figure out how to make that work. So I'm working on some courses and some materials that'll hopefully be coming out this winter. But I'm pretty sporadic on social media. I do not love being there. And so I'm not on there very often. But every once in a while, I will have an inkling and post something. And I do have a private Facebook group that I'm in a little bit more often, but it's still pretty sporadic.
Well, you'll have to give us the links for all of that so we can share it in the show notes. I want to hear more about the podcast and how you met your co-host and what you guys do over there. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So we actually ended the podcast in May. So it's called the Eat with Grace podcast. We did it for about 2.5 years. We have 119 episodes out there.
That's a lot.
How it all happened was completely a God thing. Me and Jackie Nienhuis, so she's the co-host. We met over email through a mutual friend. We were planning to do a presentation at FENCI, which is like the national dietitian conference. And she happened to see my, signature on my email and went to my website. And she's like, oh my gosh, I love your message. I love what you're doing. Do you want to do a podcast? And I was like, okay, like, I don't know who you are. I've never met you. I'm like, could we like set up a Zoom call and just like visit about this? Like, I'd just love to hear your ideas. And so we set up a call and we visited for probably an hour, hour and a half, just, make sure she's not some crazy psycho or something. No. But we just visited about life. I'm like, okay, I just want to know, like, where are you at theologically? Do we agree on our food and nutrition stuff? And I said, well, let's pray about it and see how it goes. And so, yeah, so I felt at peace about it. She felt at peace about it. So we just kind of jumped in and just started recording podcasts, and it just kind of went from there. So we did weekly podcasts, like I said, for about 2.5 years, covered lots of different topics, about intuitive eating, but also, just general nutrition topics and other things like that. So, but yeah, we ended it in May. So people can go back and listen anytime.
I love that God story.
Yeah.
of how you guys came together. That's so fun. Oh my goodness. And yeah, what a great resource to just leave out there, because like, this is like, we need to keep talking about this stuff, and we need resources for this. So I'm so grateful that the Lord led you guys to collaborate and put that into the world. It is needed. I totally want to affirm and validate your idea, and in pursuing kind of specializing within the chronic illness space. I think that is so needed. I think that it would be such a blessing to people trying to navigate this, because it's really hard. It's really hard to communicate what intuitive eating is well, especially on social media. I think we've already touched on that a couple of times. It's so oversimplified. There's no nuance in a lot of the content. And so it could be very confusing. And I just know that there's Christian women out there that want to leave dieting behind, but think they can't because of whatever reason with their health.
Right.
And so I think that woman, what would you say to that woman today, Brooke?
Well, I think first of all, I think defining dieting is important.
Okay.
That is one thing that I constantly have to do with people is what is your definition of dieting? In my mind, dieting is to lose weight or change your body. Because, you know, a diet is just the way that you eat. And so I think that has to be confirmed, first of all, is what is your definition of dieting? I think finding out people's why behind it. I think a lot of people, you know, have the intention, they want to feel better, but they think that losing weight or changing their body is going to result in that response. And it's like, well, you might not have to do that to feel better. Like there might be some, you know, changes that we can make to your diet. Sure. And how you're eating, or some lifestyle changes that might help you feel better that have nothing to do with your weight or your body size or weight loss. Mm-hmm. And I just think people have so tied dieting and health and weight all together, that it's trying to uncouple those and make them, just trying to uncouple those so that they're not equivalent, because they're not. You can be very, very healthy without restricting your dieting, and you can, you can diet and be extremely unhealthy. Like, I think it's just, again, the way that our culture has portrayed diets and has pushed diets over the last, 40 or 50 years, and just the trajectory that I think it's educating people that we can do that. But then again, I always go back to the diet, to the body image. I think body image is the reason why most people diet. Most people want to lose weight because they're unsatisfied with their body. They're dissatisfied. And so if we can address the body image, again, it goes back to finding where you're putting your identity. Is your identity in Christ, or is your identity in your body and what you look like? You can't have both. So we need to make sure that we're putting our identity in the right things. And when we do that, hopefully it should change our mindset, right? Then we're going to be focused more on Christ, what his purpose is for our lives, and less on what our body looks like. And hopefully that transition kind of helps that whole process and can get people out of those dieting cycles.
Yeah. Well said. I totally agree. That's great. Well, awesome. This has been so fun. And before we let you go, Char's going to have to hit you with a couple of rapid fire questions here as we close.
So our favorite is coffee or tea, and how do you take it?
Can I say both?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So coffee in the morning, I drink decaf. I don't tolerate caffeine very well. So I drink decaf with just heavy cream. It's my favorite. Yeah. Really strong decaf with heavy cream. I drink herbal tea at night before I go to bed almost every night. So chamomile's my favorite, but any of those nighttime blends I'm good with. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I love that. Did you, how you took your coffee change when you came out of the diet culture mentality?
Yes and no. I kind of went through spurts where I tried black coffee for a while and it was miserable. And then I will do coffee creamer one time a year. The only coffee creamer that I really love is pumpkin spice, and you can only get it from like September till like Christmas. Uh-huh. So every month, once a year I'll buy pumpkin spice because I really like that. But the rest of the year I can't get it. So I just do cream, which I love. just cream too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, I went through a period of time where it's like, I shouldn't have creamer or, you know, so I'd go back and forth and kind of got rid of that. And I'm like, this is something that I just really enjoy. So.
Good. Good. Well, I always want to know what people are listening to or reading.
Oh, goodness. Like fiction, nonfiction, all of it.
Okay. If you've got four books going at the same time, that's what I always have going. I want to hear what they are.
Okay. So the nonfiction that I'm reading right now before bed, I'm a big Nicholas Sparks fan. And so every time I go to a rummage sale or a thrift store, I just buy his books and I read them. So right now I'm reading The Last Song because I had never read that one. And then as far as nonfiction, I'm reading one called, it's on inflammation. I can't even remember what the title is. But that one I'm just kind of reading here and there.
Okay.
So.
I love it. I love it. Mountains or ocean?
Mountains. We are big hikers. It is my husband's. So I live in North Dakota. I don't know if you knew that. And we do not have mountains here. It is as flat as flat can be. And so when we vacation, we go to the mountains.
Which mountains? Where?
We typically go to Montana, Wyoming, Colorado area. Wow. Last year we bought an ambulance and we converted it into an RV. So that's been kind of our adventure. So we take that out west a couple times a year. And yeah.
I love that. I love that.
That's the coolest.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, so I need to know your favorite thing about the ambulance and your least favorite thing about the ambulance.
The thing that I love is that we don't have to like have a camping spot. We can just drive and park wherever we want and come and go as we please. So I love that aspect of it. The thing I don't like, it doesn't have a toilet. So we have an outdoor shower, we have a kitchen, we have a bed, we do not have a toilet. And so that just makes things a little more complicated. But yeah, it's been fun.
That is so amazing, Brooke. Thank you for sharing that with us today. That's like, I'm just going to be excited about that for a while.
We actually have an Instagram page if you want to look it up.
Yes, what is it?
Remodeling. It's ND _ Amble on Instagram. So you can look up and see like our before and after pictures and all that.
That's so cool. Okay. I wrote it down. I will link that in the show notes too. That's fun. So fun. Well, Brooke, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for just sharing your story and your wisdom. It has been a gift. Mm-hmm. We would love it if you could close us in prayer.
Sure. Heavenly Father, I just thank you so much for this time. Lord, I thank you for Charlie and for Aaron. And I just thank you for their hearts and just for them following your will, Lord, to do this podcast. And I just thank you for the conversation we had today, Lord. I just pray that it would be a blessing to someone, Lord, even if one person is changed by it, Lord, it was worth it. And so I just pray that as we go forward, Lord, that we would just continue to seek your will in our lives and to glorify you for everything we do. In your name I pray. Amen.
Amen. Thanks for listening today. Before you go, if you've gotten something out of this podcast, please help us to reach more women who need to hear this message by leaving a rating or review for the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. We are so grateful to hear about how this podcast has impacted your life, and we love how the simple act of leaving a review can help other women find the show. What a blessing. Thank you so much for listening to Intuitive Eating for Christian Women today, and we will see you in the next episode.